ladies and gentlemen, let me thank you for the invitation to come here. As I was listening to the other speakers, it struck me that 30 seconds on some context might be sort of helpful, how the four of us sort of relate in a sense. I guess the first two speakers are making the point that we have a fiat money system, that money is created basically out of nothing. That greases the wheels of commerce, that's a good thing, but there's a great tendency, we know historically, for this to get totally out of hand. Okay, so that's the first two speakers. The question arises whether we already have the mechanisms that could do something about reining that in. And I'm going to talk firstly about the regulators. Could the regulators prevent these really bad things from happening? My contention will be they have not. And then Bill is going to come along later and talk about the central banks. Could the central banks rein in all this excess? And the answer is yes, they could, but they have not. And as one looks at the historical record, I guess the conclusion that you come to is that, as the senator put it, the senator said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I guess the prima facie case that's being made here is something is broken and it needs fixing. And we should be thinking about some more radical solutions. Well, let me talk specifically about the regulatory side of things. Just a very brief review of the role of banks before the crisis. And these big crises all sort of have the same character. They all start off with good news. And then somehow through our human nature and the fiat money system, the good news gets transformed, the rational exuberance gets transformed into irrational exuberance. We have inadequate policy resistance, both on the regulatory side and the central banking side. This leads to all sorts of imbalances in the system, so that you get rising asset prices, excessive investment in real estate and in real property. Savings rates go way, way down. We saw this in the AMEs, which are the advanced market economies. And then through the semi-fixed exchange rate system, because we don't have an international monetary system either that works, this gets transmitted to the emerging market economies, and we wind up with a huge problem globally, which everybody failed to see coming. Well, we had that crisis, and people responded to the crisis, and that was certainly good news. And let me just say a few words on the regulatory side about some of the good things that happened. We now have more and better capital and liquidity at banks. The FSB, the Basel Committee, enormous emphasis on raising capital requirements, ensuring banks are better prepared for runs. This is good news. There's more attention to non-banks. We know that in the run-up to the crisis in 2008, the so-called shadow banking system played a very important role. Well, people are starting to take notice of that, try to do something about it. There's more attention to systemic risks. When I was at the Bank for International Settlements, the rule of the supervisors was if a bank was healthy, or if all banks were healthy, the system was healthy. That's not true, because if all banks are healthy in the first instance, but exposed to the same shocks, you have a problem. So, more attention on systemic, all good news. Greater efforts to reduce procyclicality, specific elements in the regulatory framework to lean against these periods of excess. Okay, so that's all good news. And agreements reached at the global level, which is, to be honest, almost a miracle that you can get all the big countries agreed on what to do. Unfortunately, along with the good news comes some not so good news. The crisis management actually aggravated problems. So a big chunk of the crisis management was mergers, acquisitions, takeovers. So the banks that were too big to save are even bigger. Maybe they're even too big. Sorry, too big to fail. They're so big now they're too big to save, which is an even worse situation. The analytical foundations of the reforms have been questioned. I did a big paper about 3 years ago, and for virtually every regulatory change that has been made, I can find a really smart person that I trust who basically says I'm not so sure. So this thing is founded on foundations that are not as strong as we might like. the implementation challenges, different jurisdictions choosing to do things in different ways, the Americans in particular, very sort of hesitant to sort of incorporate either Basel II or Basel III, lobbying and innovation, this whole question about the relationship between the power structure and the regulations, the more that the people with money, i.e. the banks, have the capacity to influence the regulatory structure, the less likely it is that the system is going to work in the best interests of everybody. And of course, always the law of unintended consequences. Well, I think, and I go back to the point that I made by way of introduction, this sets the prima facie case for thinking more radically about innovation, about regulation. And these are a list of the things that we could be thinking about, and since I've got limited time, let me just move on to each one of these things, because this proposal that we have in front of us today is actually only sort of one of a number of things that we might do differently to make the system work better. Only one of many that we might look at to make the system work better. Well, the first point that I want to make, and I think this is going to be relevant to Bill's points too, both in the regulatory sphere and the monetary sphere, we need to think in a much more radical way about the character of the system. At the moment, all of the models that people use, both from the regulatory side and the monetary side, basically assume that the economy and the financial sector in particular is a kind of machine that is easily understandable and that is controllable. And the honest truth is, it isn't. We made a fundamental philosophical, ontological error about 100 years ago in assuming that we do understand and we can control. Just recognizing the limitations of what we can do is very, very important. And the odd thing about it is that by embracing complexity, you're led to some very simple policy conclusions that are conclusions that have not yet been reached by our regulators and central bankers. And I'll just give you four of them. These complex adaptive systems break down all the time, and they break down according to a power law, so that big breakdowns occur infrequently and little breakdowns occur more frequently. What is the lesson that you learn from this? Be prepared. And we were not prepared, either in 2009 or in Europe in 2010. The second lesson is the triggers are irrelevant to these breakdowns. So everybody is digging down, okay, into real-time exposures and stuff like that. They're missing the forest for the trees. You should be looking for evidence of systemic imbalances. The third thing is that really bad things can happen in these complex systems. The world is totally nonlinear. And if really bad things can happen, don't try to maximize because you don't know enough. Try to avoid really bad things from happening. So these are very simple lessons from embracing complexity. But I'm not holding my breath that that paradigm shift is going to happen soon. I think actually we also need much better integration of monetary and regulatory policies. When I was at the BIS, the one thing that I noticed was that the central bankers were on one side of the silo and the regulators were on the other. There was very little communication between the two of them. And the best example of that has been in the post-crisis period, where I put it to you, the regulatory changes have all been firmly on the aggregate demand break, while the monetary policy changes have all been on the aggregate demand accelerator. Now, I just put it to you, there's something very odd about this. Closely related, we have all this business about macroprudential policies everybody's talking about. Well, those macroprudential policies were actually invented at the BIS, but the whole idea was that they'd be used in the credit expansion phase so that both monetary policy and macroprudential policies would be leaning against the wind. But today they're talking about them in a totally different context, which is let's have ultra easy monetary policy, lower for longer, as long as we can, and stop out the bad side effects through macroprudential. This is totally different from the original concept, and yet nobody said, virtually anything about it. But anyway, there is certainly scope to improve by better integration. Maybe we just need higher and simpler capital requirements. And Martin Wolf is here, and I think I've read his columns. He's, I think, quite firmly in that camp that higher capital would do an awful lot of good. The current risk weights that we've got, again, analytically, totally questionable. There is a presumption that we understand the risks associated with individual assets, but the fact of the matter is that from a systemic concept, it makes no sense to view it in that particular way. So Charles Goodhart, too, I mean, to be even more basic, Charles Goodhart wrote a book about the Basel supervisors, and the astonishing thing about it is that when they did Basel I and dreamt up the risk weights, there was no analytical judgment involved at all. The amount of capital that banks were asked to hold was essentially the amount of capital they had been holding. And then Basel II was designed to be the same as Basel I. Now, Basel III says the capital requirements have got to go up a lot relative to Basel II, but we have no idea whether the amount that needed to be held for Basel II was adequate or not. I think John Vickers quite recently in the UK said something to the effect of, yeah, capital requirements have gone up 10 times, but 10 times a ludicrously low number is still a ludicrously low number. So, but anyway, there's stuff that we can do on that front, and I'm running out of time. We could have more reliance on self and market discipline. Regulation is only one of the three pillars. But I guess all I'd say about this, and again, this goes back to the work of John Kay in the UK, who had a lot of experience in regulation. But this kind of stuff basically tries to regulate behavior. And I guess what John Kay is saying is regulating behavior is a very difficult task. So what does that leave us with? Well, and this will be my last slide. What this leaves us with is the need for more radical structural change. We can learn from other complex systems, and in a sense, that's what the Woolgate Initiative, in a certain sense, is about, which is redundancy, modularity, everybody doing stuff that suits that purpose, but not doesn't have other undesirable side effects. We could roll back the major trends that we've seen in recent years, which is consolidation, globalization, securitization. I can give you all sorts of proposals about how that might be done. Now we've got something closer to this current initiative in Switzerland, which is narrow money plus fintech. Because one of the big worries about narrow money has always been there won't be enough credit. But I see my friend who wrote The End of Banking in the crowd here. One of the great advantages now is there's different ways to deliver credit. Right? And we should really be thinking about how we could use these advances in a positive way as opposed to just focusing on the negatives. And lastly, what I would note, and this is both the good news and the bad news, is that if you can get into this nexus right at the beginning, where you can say, this institution that creates the money is so safe, there will never be any more worry about bank runs. If you can get rid of that, you get rid of that, and then you get rid of the need for safety nets. And if you get rid of the need for safety nets, you get rid of the need for regulation. And if you get rid of the regulation, then you get rid of evasion. So you follow me that this is absolutely a fundamental thing. But of course, and that's the good news, that we recognize that. The bad news is that anybody who's part of the current system, and that includes just about everybody, is going to resist this change to the death. So thank you very much.